Before we begin this episode, we wanted to include a trigger warning for domestic violence, sexual assault, transphobia, and deportation.
Before we begin, I would like to give a shout out to our patrons, but especially to Jen, Caroline, Natalie, Claudia, Saul, Andrea, Maria, Luis, Edis, and Kimberly. If you would like to help support this podcast, you can do so in exchange for a reward at patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. All right, so let's start the show.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Bitter Brown Fams. I am your host, Ruben.
And this is your other host, Cassandra.
And we're just here, and, like, it's officially summer, and I'm roasting like a motherfucker out here in L.A. It was 107 today, so that was nice. Do people in El Paso know about heat?
We know a lot about heat, and so just get over it. Deal with it. You're not special.
Wow.
Dramatic.
Wow.
No, okay, I guess that's a big thing for you all. It's not a big thing here. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of like our summers and our life all the time.
Y'all just walk around roasting? Just like...
I don't know. I think you just get used to it, to be honest.
That's rough. Yeah. It's also, what, cancer season? So I've been feeling some... And then hella bitches are in retrograde too. Like there's, like, I think Mars.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. I've just been wanting to stay home and feeling like, ugh. Lethargic and like crying. I've been crying a lot, so yeah, cancer season. I want to say I'm ready for cancer season to be over, but then Leo season is coming up and I don't want that. Yes, so
Leo season.
I guess.
Yeah, no, I've been feeling kind of energized, but I feel like Leo season's really gonna up that energy up, because that's my rising. But also cancer season's been good. Yeah, I mean, I've been eating a shit ton. I don't know what it is. It's all the planets. And no, but I've been feeling all right. I haven't really cried or anything. I haven't been feeling like emotional.
I've cried today.
You just cried like half an hour ago.
I cried like 5 minutes ago before I started recording. But no, I love cancers though. I do. My son's a cancer. I like cancers. I like cancer season. I just, like, wow. I'm just, like, crying. Like, I was watching Grey's Anatomy and I was crying. What the fuck is that? Anyway, enough about me crying. It feels like we haven't actually recorded in a long time. I mean, I know it always feels like that. But, I mean, we haven't had, like, an episode in which we talk about politics or anything happening. Because our last episode was... a special episode about us, about our name, the name of the podcast, about pride, but we didn't really cover any hot topics, so it feels like people need our input.
But people need us.
People need us in times of crisis.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I don't even know where to start. There's just so much to talk about.
I think a big thing that happened was, and me and Ruben have been trying to figure out how you say his name, but it's this rapper XXX. That's what I'm gonna call him, and I'm sorry, I'm not really familiar with how you say the name.
Temptation.
Yeah. X. I know, when I spelled it out, I was like, wait, this is like Temptation. I was saying it in Spanish. But anyway, so I'm sure a lot of people are aware that this rapper, however you say his name, was killed about, I don't want to say, has it been a month or a few weeks ago?
Yeah, it's going to be a month ago.
A month. And before his death, I was familiar with him because I did read, like, a lot of accounts of his abuse towards women, particularly his ex-girlfriend, pregnant ex-girlfriend. I was actually on Twitter when she was, like, ran off Twitter and people were harassing her. I wasn't so familiar with him then, but I was like, okay, like, what the fuck, right? This was, like, I want to say, like, 2 years ago. And then his story emerged again like a month before he was killed, and it detailed very specifically and very graphic his abuse towards his ex-girlfriend and also towards a gay man that he was it juvie that he was in juvie
yeah,
with, I think?
He was incarcerated with
and he almost beat this gay man to death for homophobia. And so yeah, this story came out like a month before he was killed. So when he was killed, it sparked a lot of conversation about mourning abusers, right? And also if we should mourn abusers, if you don't care about an abuser who died, if that makes you a bad person.
Or if you celebrate an abuser who died.
Yeah, if you celebrate it. So that was a hot topic for a while. And I think, obviously, there was a lot of people, a lot of men, who were, you know, like, mourning him. And I think it's very different to mourn someone and praise him in death than there is to just not say anything about it.
Yeah.
Right? I think that if you mourn an abuser, praise him, and say, well, like, if his death erases his abuse, but even before he was dead, everyone defended and erased his abuse, you know? And there was also this... Oh, and then there was also, like, this other layer of, you know, he died too young, and also, obviously, he was killed. Also, he's a young black man, and, like, his childhood of also, like, abuse that he experienced, right, in his childhood, poverty or child abuse or not having a mother that was there, etc., how it led to his death. So there was, like, a lot of layers to that, and for me, I was just, I feel like I just wasn't sad, and I'm not sad about it, because he was an abuser, and I think the main thing that we saw was he could have been this. He changed. He could have changed. He was changing. He could have been, quote unquote, Malcolm X or Maya Angelou. And I mean, that whole thing was so ridiculous because we can wait around forever for abusers to change. I mean, today I just saw a headline of how Chris Brown was arrested, I believe, last night on charges of assault. Chris Brown assaulted Breonna almost 10 years ago, and he has been not held accountable. He has not asked for forgiveness or done things to correct his behavior. He's just does it all the time. And I don't know. I think his fans are also trash, which is like another weird thing of like, we've talked about stan culture and how willing you are to, like, how dedicated you are to, like, a celebrity or an artist that you like, that you're willing to not only excuse their behavior, justify it, but also, like, harass whoever stands against him, right? Yeah. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, I feel a lot of things about that. I like how, you know, all these armies popped up in defense of this abuser, right? Who, you know, was murdered, and, you know, though we can talk about, like, violence, specifically, like, in communities of color, right? But there's also a conversation to be had about how the same people who came up in defense of this abuser, right, and how he was changing and he was so young, blah, blah, were nowhere to be seen when we were all talking about, you know, his, you know, the way he was abusing people for ages, right? And it shows, like, this, that same thing we've talked about before of, like, how everybody rallies and protects and supports abusers, but not the abused, right? Not victims, survivors, right? People bring up the fact, or, like, this, people bring up that supposedly this ex person was, like, holding a fundraiser for an org against domestic, abuse survivors, but even the org itself, I can't remember what it was, like, put out a statement that it wasn't, that they weren't seeing any of that money, right? Another thing, too, that people say, oh, like, yeah, people can change. Okay, so me, in the time that they change, right, because I don't necessarily as someone who's an abolitionist and as someone who does survivor advocacy work, ultimately I think that healing, you know, is in the hands of the survivor, right? And making things right, and justice is in the hands of the survivor, right? And if they believe that this person can be, you know, rehabilitated, then so be it, right? But in this process of rehabilitation, right, where was the attention to the survivors, right? Where is the accountability, right? And are we ensuring that as they become better people, are they, like, still abusing other people? Or are they actually, like, committing to being better, right? So all these things popped up for me. And so for me, like, I, you know, do a lot of survivor advocacy work. So because of that, I'm surrounded by a lot of people who are survivors, right? And a lot of people who are, like, rejoicing, right? People who are like, I wish, you know, my abuser, you know, my rapist was dead too, right? And I couldn't fault them for that. There's a lot of us who can't, you know, speak of this abuse until this person has passed, right? Because of the power they hold, right? We saw what the power of this, you know, young rapper, right? What it had. This woman was driven off the internet, right? Her GoFundMe page, you know, because she needed help to keep her eye after he beat her, right? Her GoFundMe page was, like, trolled. She was doxxed, right? All of these things were done to protect the person in power, right? And so, if we can't talk about abuse while the person is alive, and we can't talk about it after they pass, right? Which is what these people are entailing, these you know, rape and abuse apologists, then when the fuck can we talk about it, right? It just seems to me like we can never do it. And I don't fuck with that. And because of that, I'm not gonna ever police how a survivor expresses relief, right? For me, I think the day that it happened, I was like, y'all have a lot of words for survivors that are, like, you know, breathing today. And they were absent when this person was abusing, right? I hope that when, you know, my abuser dies, that y'all will all join me for a drink.
Yeah, it's like people have a lot of empathy for abusers, especially when they die or they're hurt, that they all of a sudden, like, it's there, you know, all this empathy that they lack.
Yeah.
Towards women, towards femmes, towards survivors, right? When it, like, comes to survivors, they have no empathy. They're, like, justifying it, harassing them even. But when it's an abuser, it's like, oh my God, wow, we need to be so empathetic to this poor guy. Yeah. You know? So I think that's trash. And it's also, again, yeah, how the survivor feels, how they want to heal. And for example, she actually, because I saw her Instagram, she went to his, I think it was like a memorial. I don't think it was a funeral, maybe the memorial. And she had set up, you know, like a memorial thing for him outside. And his fans also, like, burned it down the day that it happened, right? And so even a lot of people are like, well, they're friends now. Like, she loves them. I'm like, okay. And she's allowed to feel whatever she wants to feel, right? A lot, not all survivors are the same. Some survivors choose to forgive their abusers, choose to stay in contact with them for whatever reason, right? We, like, that's another conversation, but it's still, at the end of the day, like, doesn't excuse what he did. It doesn't justify it. And I had been, actually, like, my personal Facebook, I had, and Chiganisma was deactivated, and that, when I logged back into my personal Facebook, that was, like, the first thing I saw. This guy that I was friends with ran, like, a whole fucking essay defending this guy and saying that everyone that was quote-unquote happy that he died or didn't feel empathy towards it was trash, pretty much. And I was gonna go, like, in his comments, but I was like, I don't even, like, have time for this, and I just, like, unfriended him. But I was just like, I never see you say shit about survivors. I never see you say shit about anything else, and all of a sudden you have, like, an essay on why we should all extend empathy towards this abuser. But anyway, who else has been trying?
Well, the thing about that too is that, like, this empathy comes for abusers, right? But even, like, a lot of the times we're like, oh, like, you know, women want to claim abuse and people say, like, really shitty things to derail survivors, right? People bring up, like, male survivors as, like, a way to derail these conversations, right? But we had, like, you know, Terry Crews just come out as a survivor, right? And there was like big names like 50 Cent and Russell Simmons who were like making fun of him, right? And perpetuate these narratives of like, why didn't you fight back? And why didn't you do X and Y, right? When it was like just another way to like victim blame, right? And nobody was really like, none of these MRAs, right? These men's rights activists are like people that usually derail conversations about survivors, right? When it's women or queer folks or trans folks, right? None of them were popping up, right? And so to me, it's just like, y'all are really vocal, right? Y'all rape apologists, abuse apologists are really vocal when you're protecting abusers, but you're nowhere to be seen when it's time to protect survivors, right? And find justice.
I think that Terry Crews' story and voice is very important, especially as a Black man, especially because we all see Terry Crews in these movies and we see him as like this very strong Black man who's like, you know what I mean? Who has like, is that stereotype of like, just like a strong Black man, a scary Black man, right? And for him to be very vulnerable in the public eye and share his story, I think is very empowering in a lot of different ways, especially for male survivors. And I like, it just, it infuriates me that he's being made fun of for that, right? And that because we still see him again as like this strong man, everyone's like, well, why didn't he fight back? And there's like a whole layer of a racial layer to that as well, right? But even if for whatever reason he doesn't have to fight back, just like women don't have to fight back, and it's still not justified.
Yeah, because a lot of times you're not like, your body doesn't know how to react to the fact that you're being, you know, abused, right? So there's a lot of different responses that our body has that may not be what we wanted them to do, right? I know that there's folks who feel bad because, you know, the way our body responds, right, is sometimes very fight or flight, right? And a lot of, or what's the other one? Or freeze. And a lot of times what we do is freeze when abuse happens, right? So asking survivors, like, why didn't you fight back, is like ignoring that not only do our bodies do things, right, whether we want them to or not, but also about how, like, respectability and certain things keep us from doing that, right? So Terry Crews brought up the fact that he was, like, abused right in front of his wife. And so he all brought up how, like, his wife reminded him that, like, if folks, you know, fuck with you in public, right, like, it's gonna end up bad for you and not for them, right? And that's because, like, you know, you have a white executive harassing a Black man, right? A white rich person, right? It's gonna, you know, when the authorities come, right, they're not gonna believe, you know, a Black man like Terry Crews, especially given the images that people portray onto him, right, as like a strong Black man, right? At the same time, like, as folks were, you know, looking up his tweets and stuff, they did find that he had, like, expressed, like, transphobia, trans antagonism, sometime in, like, the last 2 years, right? And at first he got really defensive when folks were calling him out, but then he was like, all right, like, I'm gonna, like, try to learn. It wasn't a good, initial response, but I think that it shows that he's, like, trying to learn, and that's, like, a good place to go from that. So that's just to say that, like, that people are full humans, right? And even as Terry Crews is being held up as like an image of, you know, what, you know, male survivor advocacy can look like, we still have to hold him to the fire on other things, right? Like a trans antagonism.
Definitely. And I wasn't even aware of that. And so if, like I said, I wasn't aware of that, but it's also valid. Like, he is doing that work, but also you can still not fuck with him because of his transphobia, and that's okay. Or you can still try to like call that out as well, while also seeing both sides, which we talk about a lot. But I hope that it is called out, because there are, again, like trans men that are survivors as well, right? So you can't really fight for all survivors or men survivors if you're excluding trans men from that conversation, or anybody really. Which brings me, I feel, sorry, little side note, to Scarlett Johansson, who is, just a fucking hot mess. She, if I just, okay, so Scarlett Johansson, I don't know how many years ago, received backlash for Ghost in a Shell, in which she played a role that was supposed to be for an Asian woman. And, you know, she got a lot of backlash for that. And I guess she didn't learn, because this week it was stated that Scarlett Johansson is going to play a trans man in another movie with the same director from Ghost in a Shell. And I think her response, did she make a response?
Or yes, it was horrible.
She did. It was horrible. Okay, yeah. So her response to that was like, well, she pulled an R. Kelly. She was like, oh, well, so-and-so have done it. So, you know. Yeah,
she was like, go talk to Jeffrey Tambor's publicist and Felicity Huffman and Jared Leto, I think. But it's like, you just fucking brought up Jeffrey Tambor, like, known abuser, right? So, like, that's not the greatest defense, girl. Like,
that's not a defense at all. And it's like, I hate when people say that, because I make you think we were okay with those two. Because a lot of people were upset about all of those people playing trans characters. Also, who was it? Michelle Rodriguez did that. She was going to play, I don't know if the movie already came out. This was like also a while ago. And she was very defensive about it too. I think she actually said something similar to what Scarlett Johansson said. So the whole point is like, give trans actors jobs, cast them in anything, but especially in a role that's supposed to be a trans character. Like, what the fuck is the problem here? And I want to say, like, oh, you wouldn't cast, like, a white person to play a black person, but, I mean, obviously Hollywood does that too, so it's, like, the same thing. Like, why? Especially, like, Scarlett Johansson is not even a good actress. On top of all of this, she's like Kristen Stewart and has no fucking emotion in her face. Like, she, I don't even know why she's Black Widow. She's just the worst, honestly.
Yeah.
The worst.
Somebody said that she's like the living, she's like the embodiment of the smirk emoji. And I'm like, that makes sense.
She's just so annoying to me.
Especially.
And I hope no one watches whatever fucking movie that is.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't even get made, because I don't think they filmed it yet, right? So I hope that this outcry means that they, like, actually cast, like, a trans actor, right? Because they exist, right? And people are like, well, there's no big name trans actor. And I'm like, yes, why do you think the fuck that is? That's because y'all bitches, like, in power haven't been hiring trans actors, right? You keep hiring, you know, women to play trans men, and you keep hiring men to play trans women, right? And that's fucked up, because at the end of the day, what that tells people is that, like, you think, right, that trans women are just men in, like, makeup and dresses, right? Which invalidates trans women, right? And similar, and same thing with trans men, right? When in reality, like, that's not true, right? So yeah, so if people would stop hiring cis people to play trans people, maybe one day we'd fucking have like a blockbuster film status trans actor, right? So yeah, so that's been annoying. Scarlett Johansson can barely play a cis woman, like a white cis woman. Like, why do people keep?
I guess she can play her because they're just like bland and dull.
Yeah, but she, I mean, look at.
But also no, because white women are also so dramatic.
Right.
Someone said she should just play Rachel Dolezal at this point.
Yeah. I don't even know. I don't get it. I never got the appeal. Like, they keep trying to make her happen, but I can't think of anything where I've been like, wow, Scarlett Johansson, like an actress.
I feel like before Avengers, like, I never, and aside maybe from Ghost World, I never even seen her in any movie. I really haven't. And her voice is just annoying. She's just annoying to me.
I saw, like, this meme of her as, like, Thanos, and it was like, what?
Oh my god, I saw that too.
Yeah, when Scarlett Johansson collects all of the minority roles, she's gonna snap her fingers to erase half the diversity in Hollywood. And I'm like, because she's also, you know, she played that Asian character, right, in Ghost in the Shell, which, like, that was, like, such, like, a Japanese story that, like, it didn't make, like, any sense, not, like, for Scarlett Johansson to come in the picture, right? Like, she was useless, right? But she's also played an amputee before, apparently. One of my disabled friends brought up. And I'm just like, oh, fuck, she's already played, like, three, you know, marginalized roles. So I wonder how many other stones she needs to catch.
She's just the worst. I hope we run her off. Who else has been annoying? Nicki Minaj. Nicki Minaj. For a whole, well, and different reasons, right? But, yeah. Oh, Nicki. She's just also a hot mess, yeah. Too. But recently, as of late, with her new album, she released, or she did an interview where she, I guess, gave us a rundown on what her album is about, or what it inspired, yeah. It, or whatever. And so she pretty much was like on the sex, she was shaming sex workers, the anti-slut narrative of like, well, I wish I would have pulled it up so I can read it. For those that aren't aware, do you know more what she said? Because that's pretty much like the summary. But
yeah, she was like, my album has a message that you don't always have to open your legs to men, right? Because she found, she's like, oh, I found out that some girls out here are like modern day prostitutes, right? Who you just throw a couple grand at them and they, you know, they'll do anything, right? And I'm just like, girl, throw a couple grand at me and I'm gonna do some things, you know? Because like, that's so disconnected from like reality, right? Like, there's a lot of people who do, survival sex work, right? And that's not even how much a lot of people get. And B, like, it shows that this grand disconnection from like, reality, where like she thinks that a couple grand is nothing, right? And the way that she presented that, right, like, oh, modern day prostitute, right, as opposed to using sex workers or like seeing it as a bad thing, right, is in direct like opposition to a lot of her lyrics too, right? Which is what always fucked me up, right? Because a lot of us, you know, especially around like the last album, really defended her image as like a sexually liberated black woman, right? I remember when Anaconda was such a big deal, right? She talked about how, like, she, you know, she hung out with, you know, drug dealers because they have money, right? And how, you know, she busted open for these dudes who, you know, put it out, who, you know, have shit ton of money, right? As early as, like, her first albums. So her latest message was, like, in complete disagreement with her lyrics. And so I'm just like, this doesn't make sense. Like, are we going to get your version of, like, doo-wop, right? Like, Lauryn Hill Part 2? Because that didn't age well at all.
Yeah, so I hate this narrative that a lot of people have when they talk down on sex workers or talk shit, or they're like trying or act like it's coming from like a place of love. Like, I actually pulled up the interview and like she's kind of like, I started finding out that if you give them, women, a couple of $1,000 and you can have sex with them. I was like, yikes. It's just sad that they don't know their worth. It makes me sad as a woman. And it makes me sad that maybe I've contributed to that in some way. Like, that whole narrative of, like, I just wish women would value themselves. And I'm so sad that they don't know their worth. I'm like, they know their fucking worth. Obviously, they're charging for their worth. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? And also, like, I hate that. I'm like, if you hate sex workers, just fucking say it. Don't, like, try to jump hoops, like, to justify it and saying it's because, like, oh, women, and I just wish, like, if Nicki Minaj was like, hey, you know, I'm abstaining from sex, that would have been like, okay, that's cool, that's what you want to do, right? But to say, like, I've all of a sudden realized this, and so everyone else should realize it with me, right? That's, like, where the problem is. So if you want to abstain from sex, if you want to, whatever you want to do, like, fucking do it. But that shouldn't be applied to everybody. And also, yeah, because it makes her a hypocrite. Like, yes, you could change, like, she could change styles, she could change views and the way she feels and the way she presents herself, but it all seems very, like, coming from a place of hypocrisy instead of, you know, genuine. And then, aside from all that, she's been receiving a lot of backlash, especially on Twitter. You know, Twitter's where everything happens. and so, every time, like, someone calls her out, she's, like, retweets it or DMs said person, and then all of her followers attack them and harass them. And it's also, like, very fucking problematic, and I'm so done with her.
But one good thing that Nikki has been doing, right, that has done, is that she did speak up about, like, immigration, right? When she saw that the children were being detained, she was like, you know, well, I came into this country legally, right? Because she's an immigrant from Trinidad and Tobago, right? And so she was like, are y'all trying to deport me too, I think is what she said. And so that was important because it shows that, right, a lot of people think that, you know, it was important not only because you have a major star, like one of the most famous people in the world speaking up for immigrant rights in the U.S., but also to contextualize that, like, a lot of times we think that non-black, Latinx are the only immigrants, right? But the reality is that, you know, there's white immigrants coming from Europe, right? And then there's black immigrants coming from all over the world, right? And so this isn't only a Latinx issue, right? And specifically, it's not only a non-black Latinx issue, right? It's very much a black issue, right? Because I think the statistics show that 7% of undocumented folks that come to the U.S., right? 7% of them are, you know, black. But even though black people make up 7% of the undocumented folks that come to the U.S., they make up 20% of the people deported, right? And so there's like a huge disconnection there, right? That shows the anti-blackness in the immigration system.
Yes, and I've read a lot of stories, especially from one of the places where they detain people here in El Paso, well, outside of El Paso. There's a group that I've been currently kind of working with that they're called Detained Migrant Committee, Solidarity Committee, sorry. And they've been doing work bailing migrants out, going to visit people that are detained. And so they've documented a lot of abuse that they put out, actually. And a lot of those stories came from black immigrants. So it's not new. And it also, I think I recently brought this up because on the 4th of July, which was a few days ago, there was a black immigrant. She is an immigrant from the Congo. She climbed up to the Statue of Liberty as a direct action protest. And I saw a lot of conversations before people really knew her name or her story or knew I that she was an immigrant herself, that she was, quote unquote, you know, doing it in solidarity with Mexicans. I saw the word Mexicans a lot. But even if it was Latinx, that I thought was very problematic, right? Because it assumes one that she, that it, again, that it is only a Latinx issue, not just a Latinx issue, but a Mexican issue, and also erases black Latinx, erases black immigrants in general. And so that was something I saw a lot that I found very problematic. But then when it did come out, she did a story, or she was interviewed, I should say, at a press conference, that she was an immigrant herself. I was like, I feel like that is good that people know that she's an immigrant, right? So people can start thinking about immigration as not just, that it doesn't just affect one type of person, right? That it doesn't just affect Latinx, that it doesn't just affect Mexicans, because a lot of the kids that are being detained, or a lot of families, I should say, that are being detained are from Central America. And they technically have to go through this bullshit in two countries, first in Mexico and then in the United States, right? And so I've seen that erase a lot. I've seen Central Americans being erased from discourse, which doesn't make sense because the majority of them being detained are from Central America. Also, like, what bothered me a lot too is that, like, the Mexican government, the ex-president of Mexico, tweeting or making a statement about how they denounce the United States or Trump's administration for this, when they do it too. When I shared an article too that Mexico also holds families together. Like, they do, or like, and not just hold them together, but also they abuse them, they send them back, they deport them, they do the exact same things, if not worse, that the United States does. And whenever I bring that up, people are like, well, you know, it's because of the United States. And, like, yes, the Mexico xenophobia towards Central Americans is, I feel, rooted in the U.S., right? It's still not justified. And it's still not excused. And it still needs to be addressed and talked about. Because how can we say, oh, you know, fuck the U.S., fuck borders, but then we don't want to speak out about Mexico? Right? Because how are we going to fuck? So we're just going to fuck these borders, but there's still going to be a border in Mexico, right?
Yeah, you brought up a lot of good shit. I responded to, I think it was, he sent to folks about, like, him being like, we don't stand with this shit. I'm like, you do it too, motherfucker. Y'all did it too. Y'all continue to do it, right? The new president, you know, the new elect, right, Obrador, right, hopefully, has apparently committed to ending that shit, but still, like, you can't erase, like, a history of anti-Central American immigration system and anti-Haitian immigration system in Mexico, right? On top of that, a lot of the, you know, the bring families, keep families together shit, like, protests, like, a lot of them are fucking liberal exercises, right? They were, like, you didn't see any of these motherfuckers, like, organizing when it was Obama deporting people, right? Deporter-in-chief. But all of a sudden you saw them, you know, show up in masses when it's Trump, right? And that's because finally it was a face, right? A face of evil to them, not a face of good, right? Not like a liberal face that they're used to, right? And so, unfortunately, what a lot of these, like, keep families together protest things did is that, like, A, like, what the fuck do you mean keep families together? Like, in the same fucking prison cell? Like, no, motherfucker, like, everybody should be released. Like, I shouldn't exist, you know, and police systems, prison systems shouldn't exist, period, right? Which is something that people are, like, erasing from the narrative, right? When you say keep families together, I hope you mean, like, in a safe, like, well-resourced community, not in prison or detention of any sort, right? And we shouldn't just be cutting this narrative down to immigration. We should keep families together, right? By abolishing a prison system that separates black families primarily, right? But what I didn't see a lot also in these keep family together, like, protests and things is, like, a centering of Central American voices, right? When they make up something like over 90% of the people detained, right? And it's because a lot of the time, well, the way the asylum system works is that Central Americans, right, and people who that are extended asylum have to show up into the border and seek asylum, right? And part of that is basically giving yourself up for detention, right, or to the police system and hoping that the due process gives you asylum, right? But the thing that ends up happening is that they just detain folks and use them as, you know, cheaper free labor, right? Because there's a lot of cities that are given money for the amount of people that they detain, right? And so we should be fighting to abolish all prison systems, abolishing ICE, right? Which doesn't mean reform, right? Doesn't mean, like, let's have prettier cages or let's incarcerate everyone together. It's just like, no, let's just, like, fucking do away with borders, which serve nothing, for nothing more than to fuel, like, nationalistic sentiments, right? And to fuel these, like, separations that, like, shouldn't exist, right? This is indigenous land. This is land that we shouldn't be putting borders in, right? So ultimately, I really do believe that, like, true radical abolition of borders and ICE entails that we just do away with a lot of states, TBH, right? So abolish states is what I'm saying. abolish the U.S., right?
Abolish it all.
Just abolish it all, TBH. And so, yeah, so when Therese Patricia Okomo, you know, climbed the Statue of Liberty on July 4th, she was indicting, right, the fact that, like, the U.S. has never lived up to its promise of, like, accepting immigrants, right? And so, to me, that a lot of people want to put on this whole, like, oh, black women will save us and shit like that, right? But it also showed, like, how we don't show up for black women, right? Because something that pissed me off about the whole thing was that Teresa's, like, org, the people that she organized with to drop a banner that said abolish ICE, Rise and Resist New York, they ditched her after the action. And then they wrote a statement about how supposedly, like, she acted on her own. And to me, like, that was throwing her under the bus. So all this, like, rhetoric of, like, oh, black women, you know, they'll save us and, you know, listen to them. Like, obviously, y'all bitches are not listening to black women because y'all just ditched her. And the motherfucking NYPD, right? Right? Like, how are you going to abandon somebody, specifically a black woman who just did one of the greatest, like, actions in, like, history in the fucking, in fucking jail, right? And so I want us to really go beyond this, like, notion of abolish ICE and really commit to abolishing all systems of oppression, right? And what they can, and what those imply.
Yes, and we're not going to do that through voting, FYI. because so here in Tornillo, so Tornillo is, I want to say, 45 minutes outside of El Paso, right? Technically, not El Paso, but it's there. And so I've been to a lot of fucking protests here in El Paso or Tornillo at the port of entry where the first children, where the first tent is, or the only tent, whatever. And I'm so fed up with all these fucking protests and with all these fucking liberals, like I always am, because they've all been centered around voting. And it all, and I mean, it's not new, but liberals and Democrats, progressives, or any Republicans, they all do this, right? They use, like, an issue to gain votes. And especially here, you know, in November, there's going to be elections, especially in Texas. It's like the blue wave, what they call it, right? That we're going to get Ted Cruz out, replace him with Robert O'Rourke, who's, like, we've talked about, who's, like, this, like, perfect John Kennedy liberal punk rock man who's going to save us, when he himself doesn't even stand with saying abolish ICE. Just like fucking Bernie Sanders, everyone's favorite grandpa poser, who said we shouldn't abolish ICE. So they're like, and it's like, yes, let's a quote unquote abolish ICE, but let's replace it, like you said, with something prettier, with something more quote unquote humane. So it's not, and then of course, like, the whole, like, hashtag of keep families together is bullshit, because it should be end detention, period. Don't hold families together, period. Right? And so, like, there's a lot of flaws within protests, within these hashtags, within these views that I think we need to keep calling out. And anyway, the point I was making is, because we're here in El Paso, right, we are trying to do this the right way, to keep that narrative of end detention, period, to keep a very, not just with immigration, but with prisons, right, to be an actual solidarity with black people who have been saying these things forever, and doing it as a grassroots org, grassroots tactics, and having all of these outside people come in and do protests here that doesn't fall with what we want and the way that we want to eradicate this is, like, very frustrating, because a lot of these protests they're not being held by people, organizers here, right? They're being held by, like, those people, you know, those people that go on Facebook and they're like, I want to do something about this mainstream thing going on, so I'm going to create this event, and they've never done organizing work, and so it's just, like, a hot mess. And that's, like, regardless of your intent, right? Like, and then there's, like, big orgs that are coming to do protests. Like, I went to one that was held by Voto Latino, who's a big Latino org. And, like, I've been going to all these orgs just kind of to see what's up, just to see what's being said, right? And with Voto Latino, they had a lot of celebrities. And it was mostly celebrities talking and politicians. Like, there was probably one undocumented voice there that didn't speak for long. And I don't know if she was Central American, but you know how you said there wasn't a lot of Central American voices being centered? There wasn't a lot of undocumented people being centered, period. But anyway, like, and it felt really, even though it was Voto Latino, it felt very fucking white. Like, they had Dolores Huerta there. I didn't know she was going to be there, but she came out. And you know how I feel about her. But even regardless of how I feel about her and her views and how she's the last person that should be talking at a fucking immigration rally, the crowd didn't know who she was. And so that reflected of who was in that space. And a lot of the people that were in that crowd came from, like, out of town. Because I was reading the comments on the event, and there was, like, people from Alaska that came. And I'm like, what is your presence doing here? what is all that money that you spent being here just to say that you came here? What is it doing? Why can't you actually donate that money to grassroots, keyword, grassroots orgs doing work that have been doing work that know how to do the work? And all of the orgs that I've seen being donated to are not grassroots orgs. ACLU does not need money.
No.
I don't care how many people are like, I said that and someone was like, what do you mean they need, like, they do legal stuff. I'm like, I don't care. I promise you John Legend will donate to them. Like, donate to grassroots orgs, and if you actually want to do or are able to do, like, physical work, direct action, then join a group that is already doing that. Like I say all the time to people, because you're just creating more unnecessary work that doesn't need to be made. But anyway, that was like my long rant because I'm tired. And the thing that pissed me off about that. So Constance Wu was here at that protest, and she was the only person that I was like, oh my God, I want to meet her, right? Because she's so like pretty. And I was like going around the rally looking for her and Lena Dunham, because Lena Dunham said she was going to be here. And I was like, oh, I'm ready to fight. And I couldn't find her because a lot of white women look like her. And so, but anyway, when I was trying to like walk this point, this like security, I don't know, was like, you're not allowed here. This is VIP section. I was like, wow, we have a VIP section at like a rally.
What the
like,
fuck?
Oh, okay. Yeah. A VIP section where Lena Dunham was. Like, why? But anyway, and then there was another rally that I went to. Oh, I'm trying to remember. It was here in El Paso. I don't know who, it's like, I don't know who put it together. Oh, it was the Women's March, like the Women's March chapter here, who are also on that like liberal politics shit. But I went again anyway, and I was going to fight this girl in a Trump hat. But she went to Goldtown Border Patrol on me. And yeah, there was like this girl, like white girl in a Trump hat. And I saw her. And my, you know, thinking back on it now, I should have just knocked it off and like walked away. But I asked her, like, what are you doing here? And she started recording me with her phone. And so like that sucked because she had me on her phone. But she was like, I'm here to represent Trump. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, did he send you here or are you VIP too? And she was like, what are you doing here? It was just so dumb. And then she pretty much, like, I was following her around the whole rally and, like, making her uncomfortable. And every time she felt, like, every time I told her something or she felt, like, quote-unquote attacked, she would walk towards, like, the border patrol because we were at the border. And I was like, wow, really, bitch? And then she would come back. And then she was praying when people were speaking. I don't know. I guess she was praying for Trump. And then she was crying when everyone was saying abolish ICE. It was just a hot white girl mess. But then after that, when like the rally was done and everyone was kind of like walking home or walking to their cars or whatever, there was like a group of like five white people that showed up and they were like they wanted to do their own little protest of like pro wall and anti-immigration. And so I started fighting with them. Because, again, Mars is in retrograde, and so I want to fight everybody. And so I was arguing with them, and one of the white guys was, like, recording me, too, and, like, trying to argue with me. And I was, you know, I'm like, don't say anything because they're just ridiculous. But I was, like, heated. And so I was arguing with him. And they were just acting all tough, especially that white guy. But towards the end, these brown men showed up. They were part of the Brown Berets, and, you know, that's a whole nother problematic thing to discuss, but two men from the Brown Berets showed up and were like, yeah, you know, like following him around, and we're like, what the fuck? And he took off so quick, which is like also like he's fucking sexist, but it was just so great. But anyway, the point is these white people kept running towards Border Patrol every time they felt threatened by any of us, which speaks a lot. You know that tweet or that meme that's like white people treat police like customer service. Like, that is very true.
Well, I mean, because it technically is customer service, right? It's here to protect white people, right? And property by proxy, right? So, it's not completely wrong. It's not wrong at all.
The point is, I, like, sidetracked it off to talk about all those shitty people at the protest. But Yeah, those have been the protests that I've been at. And again, they're very centered around politics and like asking people to vote. And I'm like, if I can tell who's in the crowd or even like, how are you going to tell people to sign up to vote when a lot of undocumented people can't vote and those are the people that should be at these protests? Or like, how are you going to go up to someone and ask them that to like reveal their status? Like, I think I've been showing up at the protests with my own signs that say like, fuck ICE, like fuck borders, separating families is colonialism, to kind of distract from like the other signs, you know what? Yeah. I mean, or like if there's chants happening to kind of disrupt them with your chants. Like there was another protest that I couldn't go to, but my friends went, and my boyfriend was telling me how like the person who put the event together like didn't want them to say chants that were like abolish ICE or end all prisons or abolish prisons. And so like, I feel like if you're going to go to a protest and you see these things, like it's at least like disrupt that space, right? Like recenter it. And that's what I've been trying to do. But if you, like a lot of people, don't know how to contribute or how to support or what to do, because I feel a lot of people when these things happen, like you want to be useful or you want to do something. Again, it's find grassroots orgs in your community, if not in your community, in other communities that are doing that work that need support, whether it's financially or with, you know, you, if you are able to do direct action or support in any way, or educate.
That's a lot of work too. And you bring up the thing about like how voting won't save us, and that's important, right? Because that's trusting the system that's like built to fuck us over, right? The system's never really going to go against itself. So recently, folks were really hyped up. And I'm going to say, like, I too was like hyped up when I heard about like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, winning in New York, right? She's like a progressive Democrat, right? Who won in the Bronx and Queens, I believe, the recent election, and is like posed to be one of the youngest senators, right? And she had a lot of progressive things, like abolish ICE and you know, how she believes college should be free. But then like a close look at her actual politics showed that like she didn't really want to abolish ICE, right? And I'm reading a tweet directly from her. Right? She made a thread that was like explaining, you know, why ICE is violent and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it all sounded really good and dandy. And then she got to her final tweet in that thread, her last, you know, two sentences in the thread, a couple sentences in the thread. And she was like, here's what must be done. We must hashtag abolish ICE. Its very structure is about as undemocratic and authoritarian as it gets in the US. We have to replace ICE with an updated INS-like structure that handles crime through the same court system we've had for well over 100 years, right? And so what she's saying here is, like, essentially just, like, rename ICE, right? And go through a court system that isn't here for immigrants, right? That isn't here to allow people to prosper, right? It's here to incarcerate people. So someone with a really true progressive radical praxis would say, like, abolish ICE and abolish the police force, like, straight up.
Yeah, that's very sad, but I guess she also falls in line with all the quote-unquote democratic socialists who are posers. And I know I'm going to get a lot of backlash that I'm putting a brown woman down. But it needs to be said. It's not about representation. It's about your fucking politics, right? And what's that lady's name that's running for governor of New York? She was in Sex and the City.
Cynthia Nixon.
She's been saying abolish ICE and actually meaning it, and it's sad that other people, like this white woman, can actually go on The View and say abolish ICE and, like, other people can't. But also, I think now that everyone is saying abolish ICE, it does feel kind of empty when it hits, like, a mainstream liberal, you know, because that means a lot of things, and it feels empty, and so that's why, like I said at the beginning, like, it's a big topic right now that people are upset about and angered about, but it needs to be followed through until we eradicate not just ICE, not just Border Patrol, but like borders and like the system and prisons, right? And one thing that I wanted to address though, that is, so the center of, I guess, the whole thing why people were outraged is because it involves children. And that is not surprising, right? Because, like, people, you know, people are like, it's children, you know, you feel empathy towards children. If it was adults, maybe not so much, but because they're children being taken away from their parents, children being in cages, it does spark a little bit more empathy in people, which is, like, a good thing, right? Because it gained mainstream attention. But I also think that I wish that we cared about children all the time, too. Because I, you know, I do see people like, oh, children, these children shouldn't go through these children need to be protected. But, like, I've talked a lot about over and over again is just not showing up for children when they're in these situations, but just examining the ways in which we ourselves view children and talk about children and the way that we not vilify them, but the ways that we think about them, right? Because children are an oppressed group. They are a marginalized group. A lot of people don't see them that way, but they are. Children are the most vulnerable group of people in our society. They do need to be protected. They have their own voices, but they still need to be protected. And even though they have their own voices, we don't allow them to speak. We don't listen to them. Children are abused. And I'm not saying, you know, we all abuse children or we all condone the abuse of children. Definitely not. But I think everyone needs to ask themselves, like, what do I think about children? Because a lot of people are like, I hate children, right? And it's supposed to be like this quirky, witty thing to say. Like, I hate children. I don't like children. Children are annoying. Children need to get away from me. Children this, children that. And it's supposed to be like acceptable because they're children and you're not really an abuser, right? When I call people out on saying these things, they're like, well, I'm not like an abuser. I'm not going to go like hit children. I'm like, no, maybe you're not, right? Maybe you're not. You're not. But those sentiments that you're sharing online or that you're stating out loud still kind of molds the ways in which society as a whole thinks of children and the way that they are not full human beings, even parents, right? Parents also see their own children as objects, as property. We hit children. If we hit any other person, it wouldn't be okay. But if it's a child, it's okay, and it's not. So just, I also see people tell me, or like when people are like, especially women, you know, I don't want children. And I shouldn't feel guilty about not wanting children. And it's not about that. Like, you don't have to have children. You don't have to want them. And I understand the pressure that patriarchy puts on women to have children. Like, I totally get that. And like the notion of everyone asking you when you're going to have kids and why you don't want kids, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I totally get that, but that doesn't excuse you saying, I hate children or talking ill about children in general because you don't want them. And I say this all the time and like people like laugh about it. On Chiganismo, or like, I'm being dramatic, or like, I'm just bitter because I'm a mom and I have kids and I want people to be nice to my kid, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that we really do need to start thinking of these things. And so those are some of the things that I thought about a lot when this came to light, that I'm like, okay, let's put all this energy towards like actually being there for kids, all the time. So anyway, I just wanted to state that.
Yeah. That's really important. Yeah.
So, I think we've talked a lot about a lot of things. Some of them deeper than others. But it is July, and so Pride Month is over. Or what did you call it? That July is what?
According to the internet, it's LGBT Wrath Month.
Okay.
So, and in the UK, I think it's barely Pride Month. I think their pride is different, because I know recently it was their pride parade and a bunch of TERFs blocked it, right? Demanding that trans women be kicked out of the LGBT spaces because they, you know, these TERFs believe that trans women are trying to eradicate lesbians, supposedly. right? So they were really being horrible, and so far there hasn't been like a united statement from London Pride, right? But it was fucked up. You shouldn't be allowing TERFs at Pride. It's ridiculous to think that trans women are somehow eradicating lesbians, as if trans women cannot be lesbian, right? There are plenty of trans women who are lesbians, right? But it's a lot of this gender essentialism, right? This belief that only people with, you know, with vaginas can be lesbians, that leads a lot of these TERFs to be violent as fuck. That's why we have things like Feminist Current, run by Megan Murphy, being one of the, you know, most popular quote-unquote feminist magazines, right? It's because a lot of times we don't check TERFs. A lot of times they're sneaky and they're bigotry, right? But they weren't sneaky in London Pride. They apparently passed out pamphlets and said that basically that letting trans women into Pride parades and into Pride takes away from actual women. And that was fucked up. A lot of times when we talk about like the bigotry that we see online from a lot of online lesbian communities, right? We're told not to talk about it, right? Because it's lesbophobic or it's misogynist, right? But the reality of it is that one's marginalized identity doesn't mean they can't be fucked up, right? Lesbians experience misogyny. Lesbians experience lesbophobia. But there's a growing movement of TERFs, right, who still hold on to these, like, old-ass, you know, second-wave feminist ideals that, like, women are oppressed only because of their assigned sex, right? And not because of society and patriarchy and other things, right? So it's important that we also call that out when we see it in other marginalized people, right?
Yeah, and you said that happened in London, at the London Pride, because I'm trying to pull it up. I think a similar thing, if I'm not mistaken, happened here. I want to say it's California. I think it was in California. So the same. I don't think it's the same thing. I'm sorry.
San Francisco and Dyke March
Dyke March. Yeah. Yes. San Francisco Dyke March. I'm sorry. So that happened at the Dyke March, where I commented on. So the original. So what happened was these TERFs. The similar thing happened. They showed up with like anti-trans signs and were being transphobic, and then people called them out, and then there was like a fight, or like some people tried to take their signs away, and so the lesbians, the TERF lesbians, were saying that, you know, that people were being lesbophobic and that they got harassed at Pride. And I remember reading it, because I commented on the girl's post who posted it, who was like, oh my god, we got harassed. And so it's like a very similar thing that happens, and it's fucking unacceptable, not just at Pride, but just in the LGBTQ community, period. And I wish more people would call the shit out and stand by trans folks. And every time I do bring anything up regarding lesbians, because recently on Twitter I had brought up biphobia that I experienced particularly from lesbians, I got called lesbophobic for it, and like got met with like comments like, not all lesbians, and so, and not just, I mean, lesbians aren't the only people who do this. It's like whenever someone is called out, you know, especially if you're from a marginalized group, it's like, I think it's layered, because you're also another marginalized group versus like kind of being called out by another marginalized group, right? And not everyone is invited into that conversation or can speak on it. But I have seen a lot of TERF and biphobia within lesbian circles. And again, it's not all fucking lesbians. Like, we know that, right? Like, no, obviously not. But I do see that a lot. And I've read articles written by, and I feel like I've seen it more, I don't want to say more from older lesbians, because these lesbians that I'm talking about at the Dyke March were younger. But it is, I think it's like, I don't know. I don't want to say it's passed down, but it's kind of like when you learn about lesbian history and lesbian resistance, it's there, right? Just like we talk about learning about the Chicano movement, right? Yeah, it's empowering, and but it needs to be addressed and it needs to be called out so that future generations of lesbians aren't perpetuating these same things.
Yeah, it's all freaking important, right? And like you said, it's not only lesbians, right? There's a lot of cis gay men who are horribly transphobic, mm-hmm. right? There's been, you know, I even want to like wager that for every action that, you know, cis lesbians have put out there, right? There's been at least three by cis gay men, right? There hasn't been one on this level, right? From a cis group in a while, right? Especially at a fucking pride event, right? And and like cis queer communities have like historically been trying to keep trans women, right? Trans people out of our spaces, and that's out of LGBT spaces. And that's ridiculous, especially when, you know, so much of the work that we know and use today, you know, was created by trans women, specifically trans women of color, right? So it was just infuriating to see that. It was infuriating to see the flyers that these, TERFs, these trans exclusionary radical, quote unquote radical feminists were putting out. They essentially called trans women who are lesbians, you know, trans lesbians, they called them heterosexual men who identify as lesbians to get into women's spaces, right? And that is as fucking OG TERF as they come, right? That's like fucking Shirey Moraga level of TERF, right? You were mentioning how there's like this historical like framework for a lot of you know, lesbian resistance, and you know, a lot of it comes from Shirey Moraga, who has done a lot of good work, but unfortunately I think a lot of it is useless when she holds such fucked up views as the stuff she published in one of her works. I think it's called Still Loving and the Still Warriors, and that was as recent as I think like 2008, when she talked about her being worried that trans people were pressuring butch lesbians to identify as men, right? And she was saying that she's afraid that she's losing her butch sisters to the transgender movement, right? And like, that is as fucked up as it gets, right? People don't like all of a sudden like get convinced to be trans, right? People are trans, and there's no way that really people can be pressured to transition or anything like that. So it's just fucking infuriating to see this and be so popular, and people get so defensive when we call it out, right? But people with marginalized identities can have fucked up views, and it's time we admit that so that we can actually be there for folks when they need us.
Yes, it's not just lesbians. I know we were talking specifically about lesbians, but like you said, it's all cis people within the LGBT community, period. And yes, you were talking about Shirey, that narrative. A few episodes ago, I was talking about watching The L Word and how transphobic it was. That was like a very specific thing that was said to the trans character who was transitioning, or that had come out, and she was the character, they were butch, and they came out as trans, they were going to transition, and like one of the things that was said to them was, you know, we're losing all our butch women, all our strong butch women. And I'm like, and again, the L Word is like lesbian centered, older lesbians. And I feel like that mentality, I don't know, I guess I've just seen that mentality. But I also feel that a lot of butches in the 70s, 80s, or just not just butches, but a lot of people didn't have, again, like words or access to fully
articulate their gender identity,
or explore it, or come to terms with it, right? So it's not that all of a sudden, you know, we're losing quote unquote butch women. It's that a lot of people, like, now we have more access to things, now we have words, and it's going to keep evolving, hopefully, and giving people better ways to explore without being harassed, without being judged by, especially by their own community, right?
Yeah, and you're right. Like, I'm watching the show Pose on FX. I don't know if you're watching it, but it's like super important. Everyone should be watching it. And a lot of the trans girls on it, like, they don't refer to themselves as like transgender. A lot of them still use transsexual And a lot of the people who try to disparage them use terms like transvestite, right? And some folks still use the T-slur, right? And it's like just ways that people didn't have this language to articulate their identity, right? We had like, you know, Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson who ran STAR, right? Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, right? So there's been different articulations of gender for a long time, right? At the same time, we don't want to say like, oh, if people were butch or femme back in the day, that meant they were trans. Like, no, we're just saying like, there's been different ways to identify for a long time, and maybe some of our ancestors didn't know how to fully articulate themselves. That brings us to two people that we really like who just, you know, came to find the words to articulate their identity, right? Tessa Thompson and Brandon Urie, right? Tessa Thompson was Valkyrie on Thor, is probably her most famous role. I think she was also on Dear White People. And then
that was the first role I saw her in. She was also in Salem.
Really?
Selma, Salem. She was also in Selma. She wasn't MLK's wife, but she was in Selma. And she's done a lot of other roles too.
Yeah. And then Brandon Urie is the lead singer of Panic at the Disco, right? They both came out, right?
Yes. With Tessa Thompson, I know like earlier, was it this year, Janelle Monáe came out? And then everyone's kind of been speculating like Tessa Thompson and Janelle Monáe, they're together. So when Janelle Monáe came out, everyone was like, oh my God, she's with Tessa Thompson officially, or it's like official. And so now that Tessa Thompson came out in an interview, I was kind of bothered because everything was kind of, all the articles and like everything was kind of centered around her and Janelle Monáe's relationship and how supposedly Tessa Thompson had said or confirmed that they were in a relationship when she just said, you know, we love each other. Like, that was pretty much what she said. And so when I kept rereading it, I was like, where? I don't feel like she confirmed that at all. Like, I just feel like she was like, hey, we love each other. And if people want to speculate what that means, like, whatever. And so no one was really focusing on like anything else that she had said. And then like shortly after, Tessa Thompson did make a tweet about the same thing, like, oh, like she didn't actually say that. But anyway, she did come out, and I think that her and Janelle Monáe's relationship, even though we all know they'd make a beautiful couple and everyone's like, yes, you know, Janelle and Tessa, I think that even without it being romantic or sexual, just whatever relationship they have is just beautiful, right? As two queer women and two queer Black women just loving each other and being comfortable and each other with each other is also radical.
Because queer platonic love is also so fucking important, right?
And then Brandon came out yesterday, or at least I saw it yesterday. And I think that if you look back on his music, especially his solo music, it's there. But it feels good that he himself just, and also he came out as pansexual, and he's married to his wife. And so I think that is also, I thought, was super important. One, because he's, you know, bi men. Men that are pansexual are just labeled as gay, right? Like, they're just erased. I think people do that a lot with Frank Ocean, for example. And that, you know, that's that stigma that bi men or pan men are just automatically gay. And so here is Brandon, who is happily married to a woman who's still able to say, hey, like, I like men, I like women, I like all genders, I like all people, you know? And so, he's just like an emo icon, so that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I appreciated his campiness in his first album, right? And somebody tweeted something to the effect of like,
it was like, you thought I Write Sins on Tragedies was written, performed, produced, gifted to us by a straight? Never. They simply lack the range. Sorry. But yeah, very true. even though, yeah, we did talk about that song. It's like the ultimate, like... the slut shaming song that everyone likes. They're like, yeah, you're a whore. Your wife or whatever, your bride is a whore. It's still iconic.
Catch me at emo night yelling at the top of my lungs.
Yeah, exactly. And also Paramore's Misery Business. Oh, yeah.
1,000%. I am here for slut shaming people with Hayley Williams.
Yes. Emo slut shaming.
Emo slut.
Love it.
But yeah, so what song did you want to end it on today?
Well, I think that it's only right to end it with Panic at the Disco and take everyone back to like high school, middle school, or I don't know.
No, don't mention elementary school. Nobody was in elementary school when that song came out.
Some, or they might be, but anyway, I mean, well, I was in high school when I listened to Panic at the Disco.
Me too.
And I remember just like, I don't know, I was just about it. Like, I was like, yes, this is so good. And like, anyway, so we're going to play Time to Dance, which is off their first album. And I think maybe for a lot of people, the only album that people listen to. A Fever You Can't Sweat Out. And that's okay. That was a really good album. Like, you really, they can't follow it up. So whatever.
Yeah, no, I try listening to their new shit and I'm like, wow, like, I love pop, but this is so thank you for joining us once again. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. If you want to support us on Patreon, that'd be super dope. If you know you want to book us to come speak at your school and record in your school and have fun, that's super cool. Email us at bitterbrownfems@gmail.com. and yeah, I hope you're staying cool this summer, because I am losing my shit. It is way too hot. I'm dying. Anyway, thank y'all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.